Welcome back to Stories from the Ashes, a podcast where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm your host, Amber, and I'm here today with Charlessa and Kimberly, who you may recall from our favorite winter books episode, and now they're back to do spring books. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
So on our winter episode, we did not do Christmas books. And so for our spring episode, we are not going to do Easter and Passover books. But we do want to let you know that on our website, reshelvingalexandria.com, we have a lovely Easter book list that has wonderful books such as The Easter Treat by Roger Duvoisin, which is Santa on vacation at Easter to see the lovely flowers and gets found out anyway. And then Charlessa, you said that you read all the books last year on our Easter list and you bought one to add to your shelves for your kids. Which book did you grab?
I bought The Paintbrush Bunny by Adrian Adams.
That is
and
a delightful one.
I think it just dealt with more than just Easter, you know, using your gifts and talents and how the parents let him have talents. It was, I added that to my collection. Yep.
It's a fun one. So be sure to check out our Easter list. But today we are doing the general spring sort of books. And I found one. So we're not going to do just picture books. We have a little bit of a selection here. And I found one that I hadn't read since I was a kid. And it is Hurry Spring by Sterling North. So I really enjoyed Sterling North's books when I was a kid. They were very nature-centric. He wrote Rascal, the autobiographical story of his own childhood with his pet raccoon. But this book, it is approximately 61 pages, and it would make a really good book to read just a little short section of it every day at breakfast or at lunch. And some of the sections are slightly longer than others, but a lot of them are just a paragraph. And they just all focus on one different thing about spring that you would discover in the woodlands. And I really like this one little part because I feel that this is where we are here in Iowa right now. And it says, if you try to argue with spring, it argues right back. Dump a layer of snow 6 inches thick all over its new greenery, and it shakes it off, melts it off, laughs it off, and comes up smiling. The cardinals never for one moment believe that winter has really returned, so they continue to whistle, what cheer. Far above the valley, riding an updraft of warm air, a hawk circles without stirring a wing. He owns the world from horizon to horizon. So that was just this little short section. And then the next section begins with a little illustration, and the illustrations are just so well done and give you this, the whole book just gives you this beautiful insight into animals and their personalities and the things that they get excited about and the things that they do as spring is coming. And it's just a completely delightful book.
And did you say, is it a picture book?
So it's not because it's 61 pages, right? So it's too long to qualify as a picture book. And it's very verbose, but it's heavily illustrated. So you have that going for you. Like there's very few pages that don't have an illustration of some sort on them.
I was just going to say, that sounds very delightful. And I was also wondering, are the pictures in color?
They are not. So they are Sterling North, if you're familiar with any of his other books, not you, because clearly you aren't, but listeners, if you're familiar with them, you're familiar with the fact that they are mostly all black and white line drawings and just very detailed drawings of these things in nature and like animals and plants, both just very detailed where you almost feel like you're looking at an old black and white photo sometimes. So
I do have some of his books. I just haven't gotten to them yet.
Yeah. Your kids are getting older.
Yeah.
But this is a good one for when you have younger kids that may not want a full book that doesn't have a lot of dialogue, which some of his books are because they're so nature centric and you know, your surroundings is what is really being brought to life. So it's almost like you're taking a walk with him through the woods in these books that he writes. But this is a really good one because of the shorter snippets, because they're broken down into being about like one specific thing as it goes. So I really
like it. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say that what you're describing, I think, is probably my favorite type of book, where I love picture books, but I don't love short picture books, and I don't love books with, well, I started to say I don't love books with only a few words. That's not true. But I really love long
picture books. When they get into the meat of it.
Yes. If it's a longer picture book, you're saying 64 or 61 pages is too long for a picture book. I have, I do have one picture book in my head that has got over 50 pages of like full spread, like color. It is one of my favorite books. I love that category.
Industry standard is 32 pages.
Yes. Yes, but that's extra long.
Yes. So this one is not formatted like a picture book. It's formatted like a chapter book.
Yeah.
And it is just one of those heavily illustrated.
Well, I think that length is such a sweet length because it's too long to read in one sitting, mm-hmm. but its bite size is very accessible. It's a really great read aloud length. You can read it over a week or maybe 2 weeks, and it kind of brings you all together for a time, but it doesn't take such commitment that it's overwhelming. So it sounds really great.
Yeah. And I think it's a really good one to read during that turning of the seasons too, when some of the days feel like winter and some of the days feel like spring, and the book focuses on the fact that is the way that it is sometimes.
I feel like spring definitely has that in our lives. So one day's winter, the next day's spring. I mean, it's just these. So it's hard to sit down with a stack of picture books like we would in winter and ruffle through them when it might be sunny out that whole day and we want to go actually be out in the spring. So it's hard. So going off the black and white illustrations, I picked up at our library Sketching Outdoors in Spring by Jim Arnosky. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly his pictures that he's sketched and then wrote about. And I think it does illustrate the whole sketchbook idea and getting out and doing. So my kids sat down as I was looking at that. They're like, this is really cool. So I think there's a lot you can do with spring, with especially the illustrations and the sketching. Yeah. Sketching, I think spring leans to sketching because it's a peaceful time.
Well, I was just going to say, I actually had some Jim Arnosky's on my short list I was looking at, and when I was flipping through and considering, I decided, I'm like, I'm not sure it's not truly a spring book by the story, but the color of the art, the style of the art and the title, several of them, I just thought it feels like a spring book, but the content is really just an anytime book. Mm-hmm. But I think just that style of art just feels the way spring feels to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I like how many books lend to that nature study, nature notebooking, but also so many beautiful picture books that capture the beauty of nature walks. And there's one called There's More, Much More by Sue Alexander. And first, I think the illustrations are just lovely, like a delightful little girl having a tea party type of lovely. She's not having a tea party. That's not what I'm saying. But like that sort of like, it's just this beautiful, lovely little experience. And it's a little girl going with a squirrel for a spring nature walk with their May baskets, collecting different things that show the signs of spring. And then the squirrel is guiding her on this journey. And he's focusing also on the fact that you can't capture everything that spring is in your hand. And I really liked that element. Like, so they look at the emotional feelings that spring can bring out. And so I thought that one was really just adorable. And then another one that has a spring nature walk is Spring is Like the Morning by M. Jean Craig, who was both a sociological and biological researcher. And so Spring is Like the Morning is another 64-page book and also heavily illustrated. And one of the things that I liked about it specifically is that it walks you through how to look and how to listen to your surroundings by showing you and telling you. Like, it's not just one of those, here's the steps to it. It like invites you into the space of here's what we're listening for. Here's what we're looking at. What are we seeing when we're looking at this? And so it's also heavily illustrated, but wouldn't qualify as a picture book. Also isn't a chapter book because it just goes straight through. But I loved that one. And I loved the fact that it covered the stages of spring, like the slow roll of spring and the positions of the sun, and specifically just invites you into these nature walks and seeing things like the pussy willows come into bud and all these lovely things that I love about spring. And looking at that book this morning just made me really excited for the changing of the seasons. And I was like, oh, we got to get out of town and into nature a little more this year than we have in the past. So I'm excited for that.
You know, it's interesting what kinds of things we call, like when I was going through defining, okay, what are some good spring books? I ended up asking myself some hard questions of, okay, what am I calling spring? Because a lot of the books that I picked were not specifically about the season of spring, and yet they evoked a feeling of spring for some reason or other. And I was thinking how it can become a very broad interpretation. And so kind of along the lines of what you were just saying of drawing you in, one of the books that I picked that is not explicitly spring is called Tiny Perfect Things. It's a picture book by M.H. Clark and illustrated by Madeline Klopper, K-L-O-E-P-P-E-R. And it's got it full color, full page illustrations. And it's one of those that has very few words. But the whole theme of the book is going for a walk and paying attention. Is called Tiny Little Thing or Tiny Perfect Things, and it's teaching your child and you to pay attention to the small things. So when you go for a walk, don't just, you know, walk without noticing. Take time to notice the spiders and the how does the weather feel and all the different things and the lights on at this house. And I don't know. I just, I'm not sure why. I couldn't articulate why it felt like a spring book to me, but I feel affirmed by what you were just saying of that last book, that it feels, I don't know, there's something about spring that makes me want to pay more attention, I think. And I think I wonder if it's because that's when you have the little buds that are coming up. You know, if you're paying attention, you'll see the very early daffodils and tulips, the first ones to kind of, at least down here, those are the first things we see. But if you're not paying attention, you miss them. And, you know, a month from now, it'd be hard to miss. But I think just slow down and pay attention is a worthy thing.
Yes, I agree. I love that about how spring invites you back into nature. And there are a lot of very good year-round nature books. And I'm not here to say that your book can't count as a spring book, but it is a summer book because one of the things they're looking at are apples, and you don't have fully formed apples in the spring. So
flowers. It's a multi-season book.
Those are summer flowers. See, I think, again, this comes back to our conversation from our winter talk on where do you live in the country? Because Iowa is very clearly segmented into four seasons. And those apples that are in bloom in that book, that is an end of summer, beginning of fall experience. And all those flowers, those are not spring flowers. But then if you're looking at the calendar year, sure, like in the South, some of these things are on different cycles and all of that. So maybe your book is happening in Florida. And maybe they did have apples in the spring. I don't know.
It does have sort of a tropical feel to it. And I will grant you that I felt the colors of it were not exactly spring colors. They were, I agree, they're more summer. But there is a bunny and there's dogs barking. And I don't have apples.
Your rabbits ever. Only come out in the spring. Do you not?
Dogs only bark in spring?
I'm only outside to know about them in the spring because
it's too hot in the summer.
I don't have a dog because I'm not going to go walk it when it's 106 degrees outside in August.
Yes. Man, the only reason I ever go out in any seasons besides spring and fall is because we have a three seasons porch that's completely screened in, and it has a fan, and it's on the back of our porch that is shaded all day. And so it's generally a good 10 degrees cooler than even just being in the yard. But yes, I don't think I would really know what summer looked like otherwise, except this morning I rolled over and I was talking to Inara, and I was like, she was complaining about bugs. She's like, why are the bugs out already? Because we went for a walk yesterday and these little tiny black gnats are out. I honestly thought I was having spots in my eyes. Like, oh my goodness, was I looking towards the sun too much? And she's like, no, they're bugs. And I'm like, they're so fast. When I look at them, they've disappeared. But Inara was complaining about the bugs, and I was like, but the cicadas are coming. What are you talking about? And I'm like, it's a cicada brood summer. So I'm excited about some bugs, but I do love the three seasons porch because I don't actually want to be by the bugs. I just want to hear them.
Right.
So yes, that's correct. Yes.
Well, if you're going to make fun of my spring choices,
then I'm
gonna
make fun of it.
I will tell you the most springy of all of my choices.
Which I will give you because that cover that you just flashed at me has daffodils. Mm-hmm. So those are spring flowers.
None of which I have. That might be an iris that I would have. But these others, I don't even know what these are. But they're pretty.
Yeah.
But this one I feel like is very overt. It's called The Story of the Root Children by Sybil von Ulfers. My apologies if I didn't pronounce that correctly. But the book is these lovely, it has art throughout, and it's the idea of the little root children, the roots of the plants. But I want to read just a little piece that I think sums up the story nicely. And this is on the very first page. When at last winter came to an end and the sun began to melt the snow, Mother Earth came along with her candle to wake them up again. "Wake up, children," she called kindly. "Time to get up now. You've slept long enough. Spring is coming and there's work to be done. I've brought you scissors, needles, and thread, and pieces of cloth so that you can all make new clothes. Wake up. As soon as you're ready, I'll unlock and open the doors up to the ground." That's lovely. So it's the story of the root children making their clothes and getting ready for spring. And look at this picture. I know it won't show on the podcast, but they're marching. Right. They're making their way up above ground when their time comes, and then they get ready for summer. And
I love the Root Children books because they are prolifically illustrated similarly to Brambley Hedge. So people that like Brambley Hedge books will most often also really enjoy the illustrations in the Root Children.
Yes. And they're cute little root children babies too.
They are. They're very adorable. And I appreciate the anthropomorphized seasons, right? Like,
yes,
the mother character who comes. And I read a new to me book this year called The Winter Wren by Brock Cole. And I've read other books by Brock Cole, and I really don't know why I never saw this one. But I did for the first time, and I read it. And it feels like it's probably based on a Russian or Ukrainian fairy tale. Like, that's, people are growing wheat and things of that nature, and they look like people from the Russian fairy tales that I've read before. But winter is not going to sleep, spring is not waking up, and the seasons are not changing appropriately, and as a result the crops are failing and it's just really cold. And so this little boy, who I don't think is as unintelligent as his mother thinks he is, right? So he's probably just otherwise gifted from the norm of the town. He decides to go and wake up spring, and his little sister goes with him, and they go and they meet Old Man Winter, who looks like a giant scarecrow, and his little sister, who is very smart and possibly magical, gives him tips on how to defeat Old Man Winter and wake up spring. And I really appreciated the illustrative style because it felt like that really dirty stage of winter all through the beginning. The illustrations completely captured that dirty, wet, rot feeling at the end of winter. And then it moves into the glorious colors that spring brings when things start turning green and things start breaking out in bud. And it was, I wasn't expecting to react the way that I did to the illustrations. Like, you don't always notice the illustrations are one way until they change and invert themselves into the opposite. And so I found it truly delightful. It's definitely a fairy tale. And the mother, you know, refers to her son as something along the lines of simple a few times, and but loves him anyway. She loves him even though he's, you know, not the brightest.
The way you talked about the sisters, how I want people to talk about me. No, this is magic. Really, she's possibly magical. Yes. That's my goal.
I did the same thing thinking about what spring meant to me. And I think the one thing that's glorious about spring is like all senses are touched on. You know, when you're digging in the dirt, you're feeling it, sensing it, the smells. Mm-hmm. The new sounds this morning as I was laying there, the birds started chirping. I'm like, oh, way too early. I'm not a morning person. So that's, I think, what's glorious about spring is not only do we see the changing of it, like the illustrations that we're talking about, but also all of our senses are kind of heightened. If we're paying attention, we're going to see the blossoms, the sprouts coming up, and then start to hear the birds and those things that we enjoy later in it. But, so the best scientist ever, or naturist, Beatrice Potter Scientist, I read her biography or her picture book biography, which is a favorite in all of ours. But same thing, probably not a spring book, but it lends itself to wanting to get out and, touch it, experience it. And I think that's what nature is all about, is to experience it and how we're going to experience it. Either by digging in it, and the whole root chiller, that sounds like work to me. I don't know if I want to like, hey, I brought you scissors and needle and thread. And I'm like, really? No, bring me just the flowers that are blooming, you know? It sounds like work. Spring is work. But I think that's glorious too.
It's a good work.
It is a good work.
Well, when Amber said, okay, we're going to do a spring podcast, and I'm going through my spring in the catalog in my mind of all the spring, I realized I got nothing except for I have gardening. And I just don't even hardly have a category for spring apart from books about gardening or flowers or plants or growing. And I had to kind of dig deep to come up with anything that wasn't, it's something that's spring, but not also garden. And I concluded, I don't need to do that work. It's fine. Gardening is,
it's a glorious thing to have good books on.
It is. And I think, to be fair, you garden like through the summer and through the, at least into early fall. So I don't know why it's specifically spring to me, but it is. So with that in mind, I have 4 picture books that are garden, and I will go through 3 of them very quickly, but I really liked them. They were unique for different reasons. Here's one called Pick, Pull, Snap, Where Once a Flower Bloomed by Lola Schaefer and illustrated by Lindsay Barrett George. And it has these full page color, but then the page flips out to make a 3-page wide spread. It's a wonderful picture book for even toddlers or for any age up, because it talks about the different types of plants that grow from different types of, like, some have roots, some have seeds, some have like pods or different, they all have different ways of growing. And so then you flip out the page and it tells you, well, here you get a peanut, or here you get a pumpkin, from the vine. And so it's a really neat way, the different ways that flowers grow. Here's another, I'll be very quick with this one. Anywhere Farm by Phyllis Root. The name makes me laugh. Her last name is Root. She's writing about the farm, but it's a good, it's a wonderful picture book for kids who live in a more urban area. And it is showing you all the different places you can make a garden. You don't need a big backyard and acres of farmland. You can put a garden anywhere. And I really love that concept. And it reminds me of Charlotte Mason, who talked about, you know, you can do nature study anywhere. You don't mm-hmm. have to live in nature. And here's one called The Forever Garden by Laurel Snyder and Samantha Cotterill. And it is about a lady who has a wonderful garden in her backyard that she shares with the kid next door. And then she has to move away and what will happen with her garden. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really wonderful picture book for, especially if you have someone who's moving and you're, you know, you need to talk with your kid about how to feel about that. But it's also a really neat story about people leave and relationships can change, but some things mm-hmm. can keep going if we put a little work into them.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw those out real quick. I don't, like I said, I don't know if they're spraying, but they sure are gardening and they're so lovely. And I really liked that they are not, they had something unique about them.
So you yeah. use them. They can't come back for fall because if you harvest the vegetables, it's fall. So you can't use those. Those are gone. You can't bring those back at fall time.
Is that how we...
That farmer girl in me is saying that. Farmer's daughter here.
Okay, so if it's about harvest, I think that's a fair... Actually, I really like that. I feel like if it's about putting things in, then it's spring. And if it's taking things yes. out, then it's fall.
Yes.
What do we call
yes.
summer? Is that the tending?
Yes.
Yes.
It's the watering and
okay, well,
nurturing.
You just informed me. I feel like I have a much better grasp on these things. Yes. And now I know how better to manage my home library. Thank you for that education.
How do we get help? We are here for you.
I'm actually kidding. It sounds like I'm kidding, but I'm actually, no. I'm like, it actually makes sense. I just have
yeah.
to put it that way.
Yeah. No, it's all about like seeing things and framing them in the way that makes sense. And then it just snaps and you're like, okay, everything's clicking into place now. But I liked what you said with the Charlotte Mason about how, you know, everyone can explore nature mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you don't have to just live out of town. And so there's a book called The Boy Who Didn't Believe in Spring by Lucille mm-hmm. Clifton. And I love it because this little boy is an urban city skeptic who does not believe his mom and teachers that spring is coming. And they are saying things like crops are just going to be bursting out of the ground. And he's like, what crops? And he thinks that this whole thing is just absurd and they are full of it. So he and his little friend decide that they are going to go on a search for spring. And so they... they're going down all these busy city streets and not seeing spring anywhere. He is feeling more and more that he was right, that spring is not a thing. And then they find this abandoned lot that has an old car in it and they're excited about the car. So they're going to go check it out. But along the way, they trip over a bunch of crocus and his little friend is like, crops busting out of the ground. And so as they're stooped over to look at these flowers, they hear a bird and they look up at the bird and they see the bird land on its nest and they climb up to where the bird was and they see that there's eggs in the nest. And so these are the signs of spring that they had been told to look for and they're all excited. So I do have a content consideration for this book, which is just threats of violence because his older brother comes to get him and basically they had gone outside the range of where they were allowed to roam. And he's like, you know, mom is going to kill you. And that's nothing after what I'm going to do to you myself. And it just ends there. But the thing that I do like is he and his little friends on two different occasions hold hands to give each other courage. And you don't see that with little boys as often as you probably should. That physical touch to, you know, draw courage from one another. And so I really appreciate that. The normalization of that for little guys out there scaring themselves and, you know, jump scare issues and stuff. Just hold hands and be brave. You got this. But I really like that one.
So Wendy Pfeiffer's A New Beginning talks about celebrating the spring equinox. I always say that word wrong.
Equinox.
And I love her winter one also. We didn't touch on that. I forgot to bring that up. What I love about her take on it is she tells us the different cultures about why mm-hmm. they do and how they celebrate it and what happens and possibly why we do certain things we do, especially in the winter one that she does. But this one should explains the equinox well. It's done well, I hope. And it does have rabbits and daffodils and tulips on the front of the page. So it is definitely a spring book because it says a new beginning, celebrating spring. So I think we're good with that. No. And of course, hello or goodbye winter. Hello, spring. Not my favorite. I felt like it dealt with more winter than spring as I was looking at it. So I should grab summer going into or spring. Goodbye, spring. Hello, summer. And see what that one's about.
But see how heavy that is.
Yeah. See how different it is.
Are there four of those books or just three? Because I have three and I always feel like there should be a fourth one, but then I don't know why I don't find it.
The Hello Winter. I always just check them out of the library. I don't have them on my shelf.
Okay. Well, I will give you another unpopular opinion. They're not my favorite.
Say more.
Why. Well, I was trying to remember why. I think I don't like the language. I don't like reading it out loud. I think they're very nice to look at and to flip through if you're not trying to read out loud. But I don't, the wording of it just doesn't lend itself to me to an easy read. And I don't like doing voices. And it doesn't make it clear immediately that it's two different speakers. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started reading it out loud, I didn't do two distinct voices. Mm-hmm. And it was a little confusing. And I felt like you could have put them in different colors or different font or something to help clue me into two different speakers. I don't know, but maybe I'm just a curmudgeon who's not very good at doing voices. And maybe I'm not a great read aloud mom in the first place. I don't know.
So quick Google says there's only three. He does not have a goodbye spring, hello summer.
Okay. Thank you. So that makes me feel better that I'm not missing something.
Yeah. You're not missing something. I agree. Corbin caught on. Corbin's my, both of my kids are what are you doing type of kids. Like they want to be in the middle of everything I'm doing. So I was reading this and I started to read it kind of out loud. Well, he caught on the hellos. So he would say hello every time we came up to the word. So I do believe it's not necessarily a great read aloud. I will say I like the white fonts in this one because it's black pages, white fonts. Usually we have the flip-flop of that in a lot of books. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was cool. But once again, I don't own them. I check them out of the library. So it's just the stage we're in.
You know, to your point though, I think if you want to read it with your kid where you do one speaker and your kid does the other, that's probably a lot more fun. I know I just haven't tried that.
Yeah, it is pretty fun. There are some books that I don't think are great read alouds, but they are read alongs. Mm-hmm. I think that my kids like to read along with them and everybody has a different part and then it just becomes an event instead of just.
It doesn't mean it's not a good book if it's not a good read aloud. It just means you need to know how to use it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I found two books by Stephen Schnurr. S-C-H-N-U-R, that I really liked. One I already knew about, Spring, an Alphabet Acrostic. I think that one is just fun if you have kids that are into different poetry styles or into acrostics and they like that. Each page is a different letter of the alphabet and the letter has a word for it, you know, like F for flower, that type of thing. And then each letter has a different piece of the little poem about whatever the word was. And I think that's a fun book. And then I found a different one by him this year for the first time called Spring Thaw. And that one, I felt it. Like I just felt that book. I was like, oh man, this is a book for people who have lived in places with heavy snows that last a really long time. And then when things start melting, like you just have these chunks that just fall off your roof and they just slide down and thud. And it almost sounds like a falling tree because the snow is so thick and it hits so hard and icicles are melting and dropping and all of this. And so it definitely is one of those big thaw books. And I don't think there's not a lot of those. Like I haven't found a lot of big thaw books. And this was just a really nice, fun one. And then it focused on just some of the things that you would do out in the country during a big thaw, like mapling, right? Going and tapping the maple trees to make maple syrup. So it doesn't go into the whole process, but it shows you how that looks in places where winter goes late. And so it's definitely a northern book, probably more like Minnesota, Wisconsin than even Iowa. But I thought that was fun because it got into Mapling. It was it looked like a grandpa and grandson. Maybe it was a granddaughter. I don't know. All bundled up. Grandpa, grandchild. I don't recall. Out watching the Mapling, you know, checking on the Mapling bags, or I think buckets in this case. But I really like that one. Just I could hear the snow falling from heights in my head because I've experienced that. And so I think that this would probably be one of those books that if your kid has not experienced a big thaw, they may have no frame of reference for really enjoying it or processing what's going on. Whereas if you have a kid who has lived through big thaws, they would be like, oh yeah, nope, that's legit right there. I know that.
This isn't entirely relevant, but when I was a kid, we did a family vacation to Canada and we mm-hmm. went to Glacier National Park. And mm-hmm. I guess Glacier National Park is on the American side, but we went into Canada and wherever it was, we walked on a glacier. Like you drive and you drive and you drive and you get out of your car and you're standing on, like you're on a glacier. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget the sound of it, the groaning yeah. and it was kind of terrifying. And while we were there, we saw an avalanche. Mm-hmm. It was far enough away that it wasn't like we were not in danger, right. But still the bigness of it, the power yeah. of it was, and I was a child, so it was probably scarier, but I'm even remembering it as an adult, I'm like, no, that's still nerve wracking. It's, mm-hmm. I remember feeling very small and remembering God is so big. And this is just one glacier, you yeah. know, this is just one tiny piece of an expanse that's so big, I don't even have a way to understand it.
Yes. Yeah. Those experiences can be, they stick with you. Right. And yeah. so that's why I'm saying, like, if a little kid has ever experienced snow dropping hard from a roof or even like the top of a car, if you've been in a car where there's been snow and you didn't clear it properly and you hit your brakes at the first red light and everything from the roof comes sliding down on the front windshield. Like I've talked to my kids about this, especially with teens getting ready to drive, you know, it's like you have to clean your roof off or you're going to deal with this problem of going blind at an unexpected moment. And so, yeah, but when we had the derecho, the land hurricane, it's 145 mile per hour winds. I did not know our trees could bend that way. Like, that's just this, like, what in the world? And it reminded me of a museum in Elmhurst, Illinois. It's small. Thursday has been free day for my whole life, but it's the Lizadro Museum of Lapidary Art. And so it's a rock museum. And they have all of these glorious, gorgeous, from around the world creations made out of stone. But downstairs, they have cool things for kids to look at, including like a rock that bends. And that's, I haven't been to this museum in like 25 years, but that's what I thought of when I was watching these trees bend over. Was like, I didn't know that these things could do that and not break. And I just have even more respect for trees now than I did before that. And I had pretty high respect for trees before the derecho. But yes, so I don't like hearing ice creak and crack on the small scale of an Iowa winter. I can't imagine being on a glacier and being like, please just be quiet. I don't want to hear what you have going on.
in a different place. Like it wasn't going up to the glacier, but we went up some mountain that I remember driving. The road up to the mountain was snow piled at least 15 feet high on both sides mm-hmm. of the road. You're just going through a snow tunnel. And guys, this was like the southern part of Canada. We weren't mm-hmm. even that far deep. Like we were just, yeah. And we were barely over the border, and this I just couldn't believe. I'm like, people live here.
Yeah, that's nuts.
It's so different.
Speaking of north, like way north experiences of winter, Michael Emberley, I read his book, Welcome Back, Sun, and it takes place in Norway, where it is like nighttime through the day, through winter. And so this community has not seen the sun, and they look forward to the sun coming back every spring. And this is another one of those long winter books where it is not coming at the expected time. And I love how it subtly addresses how different personality types and staminas would be able to handle this. Because like the dad, not too bothered by it. Whereas the little kid is like, you know, my mom is clearly bothered by this. She's more snappy, more irritable, just stands at the window, wistfully looking out. And the small child has had enough as well. And there's an old folk story of someone who had climbed the mountain in order to see the sun on the other side of the mountain and to bring the sun back. And so this kid's like, can we just go get the sun? Like, let's do it. And the dad's like, no, we're not going to go get the sun. It's fine. But winter keeps dragging and the whole community has had enough. So most of the town decides that they obviously this isn't a fairy tale. So they don't think they're going to get the sun, but they need for their own sanity and well-being to see the sun. And so the parents decide they're going to go. They're taking the kid. Turns out there's a lot of people on the mountain with them. And a lot of them are going to go all the way to the top, but they only need to go as far as the pass because you can see the sun on the other side from the pass. And so they do. And it just like, it fills their soul and restores their hope. And they go home. And the next day, like, it turns out that the sun has come now. And it's just for a tiny bit of time, but like enough of it has come that there was just a slice of sun through the valley. And no shocker to anyone who has been listening for a while, but I cried. So this book like totally got me. And I was just like, that little ray of hope, right? Like it wasn't even, I don't know, like I just felt that there were so many layers to this story. And this would definitely be a story that I would recommend that you have your teenagers read, because it, you know, it's simple, but there's a lot to it if you're looking at it more than just the words on the page. Because just the concept of like, they didn't even need the light to be in their day-to-day life. Just going and getting some light for a moment was going to be enough to continue carrying them forward until the light came back into their lives. And by a blessing, the light just came back the next day. But if it hadn't, they had restored their faith and their courage to keep going and their hope to keep going. And I just feel that that's like something that we have to offer as community, right? Like we never know when our presence and our words and our hug and our smile is going to be that ray of light into someone's life that we don't even know that they have darkness in their, you know, in their internal home, like inside them. And this little ray of light might just be all the hope that they need to keep going until their light returns. And so I just loved this book. And of all the spring books that I read, this is the one I bought.
Well, I just added it to my shopping cart while you were
talking. Yeah. So. Like, this one I am getting. So I really was just, I was like, why don't I know about this book? Why aren't people talking about this book? This book is so good, and it's available to read on Internet Archive for people that don't have a copy at their libraries, or we've created a run on it now after this episode, and maybe there's no copies available for affordable prices for a while, but you can read it on Internet Archive, and I highly recommend it. And then on the flip side, then there's just those like super light and fluffy, fun spring books like Kevin Henke's When Spring Comes. It just has those three happy little bunnies on the front. And my note just says, it's so bright and cheerful. Like it just is. It's just, you want to smile reading it. It's just this light, cheerful little book that's great for toddlers or preschool, kindergarten. And it addresses waiting and changes. And somebody had said this line about a different book at the beginning of the episode, but spring changing, it's mine. Like it comes, it goes, it doesn't make up its mind whether this is lasting. And so I liked that there's a line about spring changing its mind in that book. And then one that's just so fun and magical that made me think of your Little Root People, Little Root Children books is the poem Silver by Walter de la Mare. So Walter de la Mare is a poet and has a bunch of his short poems made into standalone children's books, which I really love.
I love that category.
Yeah, I have not met one that I thought was a dud. So his book Silver is his poem Silver, and it has these little children are going with the moon and a fairy into a fairy garden party. And the moon, this is my favorite part, the moon's face comes down from the sky and becomes, it still looks like a moon face, but it's on the body of a cat. And so it's just this like that's its personification now that it's walking around on Earth, is this giant cat with a big moon face. And it's taking the children on this little fairy garden adventure. And so that one's really just a magical, fun spring book and great for a poetry tea time. If you're a family that observes those, these Walter de la Mare picture books are excellent for that. And then another one that has a song, it's called Spring Song. I was not familiar with it as a song, but it says it's a real song, verses by Jacqueline Jackson. And then the pictures in the book were by Barbara Morrow. And what I enjoyed about it, so it's obviously in verse because it's a song, but it's what each animal is excited about. Like each of the farm animals is excited about something else that comes with spring. And it was the only book that I really read that was farm animals, and it was from their perspectives. So I think we see like what spring on a farm looks like, but that's more like crops and gardens and baby animals coming. Whereas this was more like the pig is excited about this specific food being available again, like that type of, this is what the animals are looking forward to. And so that one was pretty fun book, I thought, if you're also looking for poem/song picture books.
There is a poem by Robert Burns called Sweet Afton. Mm-hmm. I need someone to illustrate it and put it in a book, please. We have people listening. Whoever's listening to this who aspires, yes, I need that done, please and thank you. And the sooner the better. It's a lovely poem about a river, stream, we'll say. And there's a song, it was covered by Nickel Creek. And every time I hear this song, I think I need this in a picture book. Where's my picture book for this? So someone just get on that, please.
Yeah. Robert Browning has a poem, Pippa's Song. And there's a picture book that is based on that poem called All's Right with the World by Jennifer Adams, and Christopher Silas Neal illustrated that. And that one is a really fun spring book as well, also off a poem, but we should definitely see if somebody wants to illustrate your poem, Kimberly, and get that available for you.
The same album by Nickel Creek also covers The Fox. And of course, there is a picture book for the fox. And so I don't know if that's, maybe I'm making that connection when I hear it, but the fox went out on a chilly night. But I just, I always think, man, this needs a book.
Yeah.
And if you only knew a publisher, you know.
I know.
No, I've been thinking lately that there are so many good poems that just need to be illustrated.
Yep.
And then I was even thinking today that I really wish that there were more seasonal books that had scripture in them. That's something that I would want. Like even if it was just one verse beyond to everything there is a season. Like I feel like that's the fallback verse for seasonal stuff. But I think there's more that could apply to the spirit of the seasons, right? It doesn't even have to, I mean, obviously the Middle East is not experiencing an Iowa winter. That's totally fine. But that book that I was talking about, Welcome Back, Sun, that one has to do with hope and darkness and that emotional stuff. And that is something that there's verses that apply to it. So I wish those were available.
One of the picture books you were talking about a minute ago, you said it's just a very light fluffy one. I would say Make Way for Ducklings by Robert McCloskey. I'm not going to exactly call it light and fluffy, but I feel like it is.
Yeah.
It's just a very easy, it's gentle.
Like upbeat and light.
Yes.
Light in spirit, lighthearted.
Yes. Yes. The mama makes me laugh out loud. She's funny. And she reminds me of me a little bit. My husband probably wouldn't find it as funny as I do. but I think that's a really easy spring read for all ages.
Mm-hmm. So there's another one that I think someone mentioned Brambley Hedge. It may have even been me offhandedly at the beginning of the episode. And I like the Brambley Hedge books because you can get them in multiple forms. You can get like the Treasury that has all the stories, all the seasons, or you can break it down and get individual books that have spring, summer, fall, winter. I'm pretty sure they even are, that's the titles. It's super basic. But another author that does those four season books is Iwamura. I believe I'm saying that right. It's Iwamura. And it's a four season set that's hooray for spring, hooray for summer, hooray for fall, hooray for winter. And so I really like these books. And I think that they are gently illustrated. And it's these little mice siblings that are out exploring spring. And so they're running through it, right? So a lot of it's in the illustrations. You're seeing spring all around them. And then they find a baby bird and they think the baby's alone, so they want to feed it, and they're offering it all these foods, and the bird's just turning it down, and then they discover what birds really eat, and then it ends with them back home at dinner with their parents, basically narrating their day, telling them about all the fun stuff that they have learned about the bird and what the bird does and doesn't like. And so when I was making sure I had the spelling correct for that author's name, I found out that they also have a book called Goodbye Winter, Hello Spring. And that one involves like a river and boating. And I really want to read it. And I think I'm going to have to buy it because it's not on Internet Archive. And sadly, our library doesn't have it. But if anybody else has read it and you want to tell me in the comments if it's worth me pursuing, I am sure it is based on my great love for all of the other books of theirs that I have read. But I really like that one. And then another one that is all about the illustrations and the humor, which Kimberly, I'm surprised you didn't bring this one up because I know how much you love funny books, would be Miss Jaster's Garden by Bo Decker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was perfect.
Yes. So that one has a...
You're right. I should have.
A lovely, older, stately woman with very poor eyesight who accidentally plants part of her garden on the back of a little hedgehog and then thinks someone's stealing her flowers when they go running across the yard on the back of the hedgehog. And I gave my mom this book for Christmas one year. I think it's a great gift for people that are avid gardeners of any age. And
I'm pretty sure we talked about it in the last episode. Because you let me add some of my favorite funnies, and I think this was one of them.
Was this? Yes, it's quite possible, but I think it's a perfect spring book.
I agree.
And so I love having it on a spring list.
So I sent that to the public school, to the second graders, for animal books. They were looking for animal books. And I'm like, oh, this one. So I did Hannah's Cold Winter and Miss Jaster's Garden, because I felt like both of those, and God bless this public school teacher, she's like, kind of gave me this look about Miss Jaster's Garden and the planting of the things. I'm like, just read it to your second graders. They'll love it. You'll love it. And if you really love it, let me give you an affiliate and we'll get you one purchased. Yeah. So yes, I think that one's a definite spring one. So what about the spring book, Secret Garden? I feel like that one has a lot of spring.
Oh, it does.
And new beginnings. Yeah. And the idea that we can like step into newness and how she experienced that. So definitely I think that one's a good one to add to our list without it being a picture book.
Mm-hmm. It has a lot of symbolism of kind of what something Amber was talking about a minute ago made me think of it, of the idea that as spring develops, then our health and kind of our our vigor can, I don't know, I'm not saying it very well, but it's the idea of, it's life and spring being synonymous. Mm-hmm. The spring season kind of representing life and health.
And even speaking to that book, Amber was saying earlier about where it's dark all year long, I'm sitting there going, or for that season, I'm like, I would love that. But I also see how certain personalities do need the tilling of the ground. They need the idea of something to do, the something to get out. Me goes, man, I want to stay home. Myself says, I want to stay home. I want to enjoy this. I wouldn't be the one longing at the door and the window looking forward to that. But I see it. I see it in people. I see the hope of spring, the hope of new beginnings, the hope of a resurrection, of the idea of our work has fruit. Our work that we're going to do in spring will produce a fruit in fall. And that's where, you know, Secret Garden and even Heidi, where our willingness to submerge ourselves into those beginning ages or those beginning times in our life will bring about those healing touches, those healings that we need, not physically, mentally, and spiritually, all those things we need.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And I think sometimes it's not just healing the body and it's not just healing the mind. I think in the Secret Garden, you have themes of healing the heart. Mm-hmm. And some of it is the symbolism, but some of it is also, it's what you were saying of doing the thing, doing the work is what brings about the healing, mm-hmm. not in a works-based type of, right. you know, religion, but simply in a, this is how the Lord made us. We are meant to do things, to be active. And lots of studies have shown that people who are in nature or otherwise just look at the color green tend to have better mental health than people who don't have green nature around them. And I think it's really interesting how that speaks to some things that God just put deep into us that we can't even entirely explain, but we can observe and say, this is true for whatever reason, this is part of what it is to be human.
Right. I also like in the Secret Garden, the aspect of as each individual heals and finds healing in their own lives, then we start seeing restored relationship. Then we start seeing a return to community for those who had either been in a self-exile or a trauma-based one. And so I really like that book for the example of the doing your own work and preparing yourself for even the opportunity to have reconciliation and restoration later in those relationships.
Well, this is probably kind of a stretch too, but I think there you could take it to say it's something of the difference between, oh, that's a lovely flower and wow, that's a remarkable garden. A flower by itself, a person by itself can be lovely and wonderful, but a garden full of lovely flowers or a community full of lovely people is greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so good.
So I just had two more picture books. I don't know if you ladies had anything else, if we were to the end of your stacks.
Oh, I do. I do have one more that I was really excited about.
Yes.
This is, where did I put it? This is my new to me. Here it is. It's called, very simply, The Gardener. But it's by Sarah Stewart, pictures by David Small. Apparently, this is not new to y'all, but it was new to me. And one of my favorite things about it, so it's... Amber will call it an epistolary picture book, I think. It's written entirely through letters. But the writer, the girl writing the letters, is named Lydia Grace, which is special to me because my firstborn is named Lydia. And my lastborn, her middle name is Grace. So it's perfect for our home. We clearly need this in our home library. But it's about a girl who lives, I guess, in the country. And this is we start out in 1935 and we go through.
So it's a Great Depression story.
Yeah, 1936. So it's a Great Depression story and she starts out in the country, but then she's got to leave her country home to go live with Uncle Jim in the city. And Uncle Jim seems to be kind enough, but he doesn't smile. And Lydia Grace loves to garden, and she, I guess Uncle Jim runs a bakery, and she knows nothing about baking, but she loves to garden. In fact, she wrote a PS to Uncle Jim, which I thought was so funny. Okay, so in one of her earliest letters to Uncle Jim, before she's met him, this is as she's mailing from the train station, she says, here are three important things that I'm too shy to say to your face. One, I know a lot about gardening, but nothing about baking. And she has two other points, and she signs. So I just think, well, how self-aware. I love that she would just say that. But by the end, I think she comes to know a little bit something. She comes to know something of baking, but then also she has blessed not only her Uncle Jim, but also a friend that she makes, and the whole community ends up being blessed by her love of gardening. And by the end, I think it's fair to say that Uncle Jim is sad to see her go back home. But I was surprised by this one because I don't see a lot of Depression era books that are not also couched between a war. And this really didn't touch on war specifically. It was just, you know, Depression. And I really liked the art in it. It has, it's got a very urban feel. And I think it tells a lot of the story through the pictures. And it has one two-page spread that has no words. And that's one of my favorite pictures in any picture book. I love when you have pages that are, the story is being told through the art. And sometimes you just don't even need the words. And I think the placement of this two-page spread with no words is perfect. And the way it moves the story forward. So I have just become a huge fan of this book that apparently y'all already knew about.
Have you read any other books by Sarah Stewart?
No, but I guess I need to now, huh?
She has one called The Librarian, and you will love it.
Well, something to look forward to.
Yes.
Well, I think multi-generation, where she writes back to her grandma, and her grandma sends her the seeds. I mean, there's a lot in this. And the hardships and how the family united. Could you imagine being that, I assume, single uncle, taking on a niece that he has no, you know, relationship with. Don't want to be in that situation right now.
Well, and I wouldn't want to be the niece either, to be fair. I mean, I think that'd be very scary to leave her home, her parents, the country, to go into a city to live with a relative she doesn't know. But she seems to do well with it. She seems to have a good attitude, and she makes the place more lovely for her being there.
It happens more than I think we experience personally now. Secret garden, even a place to hang the moon. I mean, they doesn't necessarily go live with uncles, but I mean, they had to go and do. Yeah. And that has to be hard. And I'm glad she had the garden to reflect on and to use.
So. You like how it just dropped in, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobes, and now you have to put it in the show notes?
I'm on to you, Kimberly.
You gave me an opportunity, and I took it.
I'm going to take this opportunity then to tell you how challenging it is to read The Chronicles of Narnia with Inara, because you just opened the door. So Inara, we didn't read them when she was younger for a myriad of reasons, mostly because we were dealing with one trauma after the other, and it just kept getting pushed to the side. And so I decided this year was going to be the year we were just going to read through all of them as our back and forth to dance audiobooks, because we have an hour and a half round trip. And so we get started, and I made the mistake of starting these as pretty much her first books after The Lord of the Rings. And I'm going to tell you right now, whatever you read after you finish The Lord of the Rings is going to feel like a letdown. So she basically felt like I was giving her like baby food. She's like, I don't know why they were friends. I don't know why anyone thought these books were good. I can understand all of Tolkien's feedback about all the changes Lewis should have made. And I was just like, oh, child, you are like on my last nerve. And I'm just like, we're just going to get through it. And Inara, bless her heart, just loves me. And so she was willing to do this and not complain about it. And so we made it through the first couple. And they're short, like compared to what we're doing when we listen to the audiobooks for The Lord of the Rings. Like, these books are tiny and they're fast and you fly through them. And so there's not a ton of plot development. There's not a ton of backstory. There's not a lot of I mean, there's world building, but like not to the scale of Tolkien talking about trees for 40 pages, right? So she got through, and then we got to The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And I think she connected with that one a little bit more just because she's such a mythology nerd. And there was definitely more like magical, mythological referenced stuff going on where she was making connections. And then before we had even started reading these, I was telling her that my two favorites were Horson's Boy and, which I probably just got the title wrong because I got it wrong once and now I just psych myself out. So it's either like A Horson's Boy or The Horson's Boy or Horson's Boy. Like, I
can't believe this. All the same to me. Good work.
I am a hot mess on this one now. But that one and The Silver Chair. And this
Silver Chair
stinker basically tells me the plot to The Silver Chair because Lewis ripped it straight out of mythology. And I didn't know that because I was not allowed to read mythology as a child, which is something I decided to do differently with my own kids. And so Inara, before reading all of these books that I knew had mythology references, has like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and book and book and book and book of mythology for Greek and Roman mythology under her belt. And so she basically tells me the plot of The Silver Chair. She's like, oh, whenever I hear about a silver chair, I just think of, and then she narrates like a mythological silver chair story. I'm like, yeah, that's basically the book, Inara. And she's like, oh, haha. So we're in The Silver Chair right now. And we are literally to the silver chair in the story. And she's like, she's enjoying this one. And I'm so excited, you guys. I'm like, it's about time. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. She's like, nothing has been like a plot twist for me. I've seen everything coming, but this one is a lot more enjoyable than the first two. And I really think it has to do with like the length of the stories. And the first two just felt like they must be baby books because they were over in an hour instead of 25. And but yeah, so I've been very much enjoying reading the Chronicles of Narnia with Inara, probably enjoying it more than her, but that's okay. Sometimes as a mom, you get to have those moments.
Well, we're having that moment too. We are reading Going to Swim, and we have 2 hours round trip, so we are flying through our books too. And
yeah,
we have great discussions. Hilarious. Yes. I mean, because my husband's driving at this moment. And so, well, yeah, probably today's his last day. He's going to drive with us, so we have to get through as many as we can. But they have a cantering back and forth, my kids with him and what they like and don't like about it, which is so fun as a mom to see.
Yeah.
Education working and all of us. Yeah. So, yeah.
Sure, Alyssa, have y'all gotten to Silver Chair yet?
Yes, yes. I can't tell you what we're on, but I like Silver. I'm kind of like Silver Chair kind of got me. I was cruising along. This is okay. I don't see what's going on. Don't see the greatness and all this.
Don't see the hype.
Yeah, I didn't see the hype, didn't do it. And I don't want to, I'm so cautiously treading out here. Like you were on the glacier. I'm going to sneak out here just in case. You know, I didn't see the hype of it, didn't understand it. Corbin in his infinite craziness goes, well, yeah, this book can't be over. They're not on the boat yet. Like, because he had seen the movie. And so he had started to see things. But for him, that's good. He has some auditory issues, and so he needed to see that. Right. So it is happening in our family. So yes, we are to the Silver Chair. Might be past it. Campbell is our DJ. She gets to pick what's next. I sometimes doze because I'm not driving. Thank you.
Well, one of my favorite quotes in all of literature is in the Silver Chair. And since we're talking about it, I'm definitely going to use this opportunity to read it. And it's by Puddleglum. And he says, what?
I said, is it a spoiler?
I don't think so.
Okay. I was just making sure for our listeners.
If it is, you can edit it out and you can just replace it with one of the greatest quotes in all of literature.
Okay.
But Puddleglum says, so I won't deny any of what you said, but there's one more thing to be said even so. Do you know where I'm going? Is this a spoiler?
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Okay. Suppose we have only dreamed or made up all those things, trees and grass and sun and moon and stars and Aslan himself. Suppose we have. then all I can say is that in that case, the made-up things seem a good deal more important than the real ones. And I'll tell you, just in my personal testimony, that sentiment, there was a time in my life when that, I wouldn't have said it that way, but that sentiment essentially saved my life.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to think about where I would be if the Lord had not pulled me back unto himself, we'll say. And I didn't know what was, there was a time when I didn't know what was real and what was true, and I didn't know what I believed. But I did know that if the things that I knew of God had been taught about God, if they were not real, I would rather believe them than not. And so I just think that is such a succinct and eloquent way to say something that is incredibly profound, and for some people in some seasons, even life-changing.
Yeah.
So y'all can miss the point of Narnia all you want, but I'm going to say I forever have such an affection for Narnia. It goes so deep. And I think they are some of the richest stories in all of our literature.
Yeah. I think Inara has moved out of her skepticism enough that now in A Silver Chair, I'm able to just be like pausing the book and saying, listen to that line again, and just repeating it and saying, do you see how much theology and how much truth about mental health Lewis just packed into a single sentence? Like, it might go over your head as a kid, but when you keep reading it and keep letting this stuff, you know, not fester, but like stew in your spirit, in your mind, that there's real deep truths here that so many people miss that are so much of being a human and being a Christian and having a faith that you're walking in and being able to be in community. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And Inara, she's really seeing it now. And so I think that she potentially would even go back at this point and read the first two books again through a different lens. And I think also with The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, she had seen a play of it locally a few years ago. So in her mind, like, she already knew it. And so she just didn't get invested the way that I had hoped she would. But yeah.
You know, I really didn't know hardly anything about those stories until the first time I ever read them. I was in college. I read them over a Christmas break. And so I was at least 18, maybe 20 years old. And I somehow my entire childhood, I never read them. They hadn't been read to me. I never heard them. I didn't even know the plot. So I was certainly old enough the first time I read them to pick up on those deeper themes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, it's part of why it means so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was deep from the very beginning for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I do have a screenshot, and I'm pretty for sure it's the same quote you just read that I was going to go back and listen to be able to write it through. And I agree. I'm going to go back and read. I think sometimes when you're listening to it, you're just flying through it and you can't ponder what was just what was spoken. So sometimes audiobooks are great, but there's still something about that written word, reading the words, seeing them, letting them register with you.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things that really stood out to me when I'm talking about like how much mental health stuff can get packed into one sentence in the chapter Travels Without the Sun, they're on this boat going through the underworld, and they've been on this boat for longer than they have been able to track time. And it says, how often they woke and slept and ate and slept again, none of them could even remember. And the worst thing about it was that you began to feel as if you had always lived on that ship in that darkness. And to wonder whether sun and blue skies and wind and birds had not been only a dream. They had almost given up hoping or being afraid about anything when at last they saw lights ahead, dreary lights like that of their own lantern. And I turned to Inara and I was like, what do we call it when you give up both hoping and both being afraid? And she's like, depression. And I was like, yeah, like they are now to the point of complete numbness to all emotions on both ends of the scale. And Lewis just like summed that all up in a single sentence. So
he's good at that.
I think he's really good at that, being succinct. So, yeah, well, you know, that is similar to that book about no sunshine, right? So we can tie this in to our spring discussion. Yeah, it came full circle there. So, okay, well then let's just do two last spring books and then we can wrap here. So I found this one, Spring Things by Maxine Kumin, and it's fun because it's in verse and it's spring on a farm and the little boy has been told that he should expect a surprise soon and he's all excited because it's not his birthday anymore. And what could it possibly be? Personally, as a parent reading this book, I thought his mom was pregnant and that there was going to be a baby. And I wasn't completely far off. Oh, because they only illustrated the mother from behind. And I was like, they're hiding her pregnant belly from us. But it wasn't the mom. It's a baby calf. There was a new baby calf coming that's the same size as him since he's 7. And that's his surprise. But it's just a really fun look at the farm because his dad tells him he has to like find 10 things that represent spring and to bring them back to the, like to come tell the dad about them as he finds them. So over days, he's finding more and more spring things. And his mom has told him that when the lawn is full of crocus, and so he gets really frustrated because there's only one crocus. And he's like waiting for the rest of them to come. He's like, one is not a full yard. But yeah, so that one's a really fun on the farm one. And then a classic, Hi, Mr. Robin by Alvin Tressault. I don't think you can do a spring list without this one. Tressault is just a beautiful illustrator. If you like 1950s illustrations, which are my jam, and I really like his stuff. And this one just talks about, like, it addresses impatience, like impatience for the season to fully change, and highlights just the slow roll that spring really is. It comes in slow and it doesn't last long, and Mr. Robin is there, so it's a fun little one.
You know, I really didn't think about it until you were talking just now, but it's interesting how much our spring books are similar in theme to last year's reading challenge category of the Psalm 23. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of overlap between, I mean, literally the shepherds, but also just kind of a healing and shepherding, nurturing, growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Well, these books will be available in our show notes for those who are interested in adding them to their own shelves or checking them out at the public library, or a lot of them are available as well on Internet Archive, which is a wonderful free resource if you haven't checked it out at archive.org. And we also have that Easter book list that you can be sure to see. All of these are on reshelvingalexandria.com. And we are so grateful that you joined us. And we would love to hear if your favorite books made the list. And if they didn't, what were they? Because we would love to have an opportunity to read them. Remember, everyone, the stories are truer than true.